comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors. And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm well aware of the fact that you could be in a million other places doing a million other things right now, and you chose to be here. I appreciate that. And I'm delighted to be here with you. I think we're going to have a very, very interesting time tonight. I think it's going to be something you'll really enjoy. We're here, you know, because you matter. That's not just a cliche. You know, we live in a world that wants to convince you day by day that you're just another tiny cog in a great big machine. But that's not true. And I just want to be the one that reminds you every day that you matter. And never forget that. We're here because you have a right to know as well. Many of you remember the shows that I did with Jerry Wills about the time portal located in southern Arizona. Remember that? Well, Arizona is just loaded with things that make it a paradise for fans of the paranormal. And tonight, we are going to return to that time portal. We have some other things we're going to talk about as well, but we're going to return to that time portal with someone else who's been there. And I think you're going to find his account fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Now, you probably listened to last night's show, and, you know, we... is very controversial information. As I said, if it's not controversial, it's not here. Okay? Why do we want to listen to the same stuff we heard last year? So, you know, it's got to be a little bit on the edge for us to even be interested in it. But anyway, I got a lot of email about the show, and almost all of it very positive, one or two that weren't so positive. But that's normal. That's okay. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, of course. But if you were here and you caught the show last night, you know that I mentioned that I had tried to get in touch with Dr. Hanshoemaker and had, in fact, left a message on his voicemail and had not received a call back. I received a call from him today. And we had a nice chat about the boxes that have been found on the beach. And I will be updating you tomorrow night. We're going to go open line tomorrow night. Maybe, if I still have a voice. We'll go open line tomorrow night. And you can bring your own topic. But I will, at the beginning of the show tomorrow night, update you on my conversation with Dr. Hanshoemaker about those boxes, okay? So we don't have to go on what somebody else says they thought they heard him say to his second cousin. I talked to him. I know what he said, and I'll share it with you tomorrow night. All right, now we're going to step away for a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Bill Riley of Tucson, Arizona. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Just a quick note. I don't know if the technical difficulties on the TV channel are happening somewhere close to us, or if it's happening at our server. But some of you are able to see it, and some of you are not able to see the TV channel. Those of you who are subscribers to our members community, we're working on that, and have patience. Remember, it's a radio show, and you can always catch it live on our radio streams. All right, so do that and enjoy. And if we can get the video thing worked out, we'll do that. But also remember, we are capturing it. And so if you are a member here at The Kevin Smith Show, you will get to see it as the latest show. And that'll happen tonight, of course. Right after the show, we'll upload it. But we will keep working, trying to get this little weirdness worked out. It looks like it's working here, so I'm persuaded it may be some difficulty over at the Justin TV website, but we'll see. My guest this evening is Bill G. Riley, and Bill Riley is a businessman in Tucson, Arizona, a successful businessman in Tucson, Arizona, famous city, Tucson, and in fact, that whole area of Arizona is quite famous. Not too far from Bill would be, you've all heard of it, the gunfight at the OK Corral over at Tombstone. It's not that far away from where Bill is. And I don't think he was involved in that. He's a little bit too young for that. But nevertheless, it is a quite a historic area of the United States of America. And, you know, when the days of the Wild West were over and we moved into modern times, and it is quite modern. If you've never been to Tucson, you ought to go. It's quite a nice city. But we moved into modern times. That whole area of Arizona continued to be doing things that are historic, not just the gunfight at the OK Corral. But there are a lot of things happening in that area, and they are, I don't know any other way to describe it other than to say paranormal things, strange things. There may, of course, someday be a scientific explanation for them all, but there's not today, and so that makes them paranormal. I want to welcome Bill to the show. Bill, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome to you. Thank you.
Bill, I have already told our audience, of course, that you have been to this time portal in Arizona, and they're familiar with it, those who have been listening to this show for any length of time, because they remember the shows I did on the time portal. I think it was 2008, maybe 2009, I did some shows on that time portal. And we had Jerry Wills on. You know Jerry. And we had Jerry Wills on. He was he took an expedition to go try to find this time portal and to videotape it, whatever he found, and ran into some really strange phenomena. And basically, I would have to say he walked into a whole cloud of weirdness down there. But you were there, and you were there with your wife prior to Jerry going down there. In fact, I guess a pretty good time before Jerry went. Tell us, what is this time portal? And basically, you don't have to pinpoint it, but kind of what area of Arizona it's in. And, you know, what's the story about it?
Well, Ron Quinn, he was the original explorer that went down there, and he was living in Aravaca at the time and writing stories as he went along and did his treasure hunting. And he and his brother had a lot of adventures in the 1950s down in that area. And one of the adventures they went on was told to him by an old Indian guy, and it was about the legendary portal that the tribes, various tribes, I would imagine the Apaches, and you know, if there's any Navajo down here at the time, the Navajo and the Opata and the Pemon and Papago and you name it. The tribal elders would gather at this sacred spot, and they would do ceremonies that included this doorway. And this doorway was made out of solid stone, and it was erected either by nature or, I don't know, maybe a shaman had erected it, who knows. But the Indian that Ron and his brother Chuck had befriended and given a ride many times, said he wanted to share this with them, so he took them to the site of this doorway. And Ron and his brother immediately started having some weird occurrences happen at the doorway once they finally did find the doorway. But the story goes, the Indian legend that went along with this doorway is about a tribe that lived in the area at the time. There was two young braves that were out on a hunt, and they were gathering food for the tribe, and they were killing rabbits with their bows and arrows, and they came upon this stone doorway. And this stone doorway was just an oddity to them at the time, and so they were playing around the doorway while they took a break. Apparently a monsoon, a real violent electrical storm was moving in at the time, and there was a lot of lightning going on around this area. And the two braves, as they were playing back and forth and running through this doorway, apparently there was a flash of lightning, and one of them disappeared as they went through the doorway. Well, it obviously scared the other friend of this Indian brave, so he ran back to the campsite and told the elders about his story, and they didn't believe him at first, so eventually they said, well, we have to go back there, because they could see that the friend of his was not coming back. His horse had come back with nobody on it. So they went back to the site, and they stood there and threw rocks through the doorway. I guess the electrical storm was still going on at the time. And they threw rocks through the doorway, and nothing happened. They were about ready to give up when all of a sudden there was a flash and a rock disappeared. And they decided to try throwing something live through it, so they got a hold of a rabbit somehow, and they threw the rabbit through there, and the rabbit vanished. So it became known then as a sacred doorway, and it was a spot for a gathering of all the chiefs and the medicine men of the various tribes. And they would have their ceremony there, and usually it was during a monsoon or an electrical storm that they would do this, because they knew that the doorway would be activated by the lightning nearby and the electricity. So they
let's pause for a moment, and I want to define for some of our audience, because we do have audience all over the world, and they know the word monsoon. But understand, Bill is in Arizona. And in Arizona, monsoon means there's four drops of rain instead of two. Okay? I mean, it's almost that
Every
dramatic.
That explains it. Unless you get caught in a bad one, and you get caught in a wash or something, have a wall of water chase you down the wash, then...
Yeah. Yeah, no, but it's not monsoon like you are used to in Asia, okay? But it is a time of the year every year in that part of Arizona where the humidity is very high, and if it's going to rain that year, it's going to do it during monsoon.
You bet. But mainly it's just electrical storms, just a mm-hmm. series of electrical storms that move through. And usually there's just, you know, a lot of lightning in, you know, involved in these storms. There's not much else. A lot of wind, a lot of lightning, a little bit of rain. So they passed on the legend to Ron and his brother Chuck. Now, this happened back in the 1950s. I believe it was 1956 and 57. So Ron and his brother had gone there many times until they started experiencing some time loss. And Ron's brother Chuck, he had a bad experience with it, and that's when they decided not to go back to the area. But Ron had, I befriended Ron in the early 2000s, and we got to become pretty good friends, and he decided one day to tell me about it, and he was giving me directions on how to get there. So my wife and I got together an expedition. We went down there, and it took us, I don't know how many attempts to find the area, but it was pretty hard. Ron, he was an old school kind of guy. He didn't have maps. I mean, he had maps, but he didn't have the ability to find where he was on a map. He would use photographs to show you where he was at, and he would say, okay, you'll know you're there when you see this on the horizon. Well, that's pretty vague. I mean, it's kind of hard to follow, but we did. We went down there. He had a panoramic set of photographs that went all the way around, and once you found where you were supposed to be, that's what you would see. Just using that as a guide, and not a very good guide, but we used it as a guide. We went down there. And we would go in, we would find a spot, we would go back in there, and we would investigate, and we couldn't find the portal. We'd come back, we'd talk with Ron, he'd say, okay, no, you need to move over a little bit. We'd go back. Eventually, we found this portal. And we got back up in there, and it wasn't quite as far as what we had been going. We'd actually been going past it. You have to go up a narrow canyon. It's just a one, one valley canyon. There's no tributaries anywhere. You have to go up this canyon. And, we eventually got to the site, and we got there fairly, early in the day. It was a pretty hot day. I think it was like 110 that day, 111, maybe 115. And, we climbed to the top of the mountain that is associated with this, this portal, this doorway. And we got up there and we took a break, and I sat down to rest and didn't realize that I was sitting inside of a giant geode. That's how big the geodes are in this area. There was literally a giant, it looked like a big half of an egg, almost made a chair. All the quartz crystal was dirty, but it was there, it was underneath you, and I sat there to rest and I was like, wow, this is pretty special. I've never seen a geode this big. The whole mountains in that area are all made of crystal and geodes. And apparently every time there's thunder and or lightning, the loose crystals are the ones that are more apt to generate a frequency. You can literally feel the vibration and hear it in the ground, hear it in the bedrock, because these geodes are locked in bedrock. The molten lava, when it came up, it just locked these geodes, which are just giant bubbles in the lava. They get filled eventually with silicates or gases that form the crystals inside of them. And there's like four or five mountains in this area, and they're just full of these geodes. So we stumbled upon this giant geode, and we were taking a break there. When I got up on the back of the geode and looked over, you could see the columns of the doorway. You could see the two square columns. They were fairly square. Supposedly they looked natural, at least that's what Ron had had told us, but these two square columns were still standing. So we made a beeline for that. Well, once we got over there, they weren't there. So we made a couple of trips back, and we could see it, and then we'd get over there, and there would be nothing like that there. We did that four or five times. That was the beginning of the weirdness that started to happen. Eventually, I told my wife, I said, look, we have radios. I'll stay in contact with you. You stay by the giant geode. And I will make a sweep of the area as far as I can go for as much time as we got. I'll make a sweep in the area, and we'll stay in constant contact. Well, as I started making my sweep, I got a little ways away. She was still inside. I could still see her. She could still see me. All of a sudden, we lost contact. We couldn't see each other. The radios wouldn't work. We couldn't hear each other. We were within earshot. We still couldn't hear each other. After a while, she started to panic a little bit. I started to panic a little bit. Neither one of us could see each other. It was like I had just vanished. There was a little bit of monsoon activity to the south of us that day, so I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. But what happened later will kind of tie in together what we experienced and why it possibly could have happened. We made our way, finally, I somehow got out of this area that was causing all of this, I don't know, it's this eruption with whatever the space-time continuum was, and we connected again, and once we connected again, we made the decision it was time to leave. We didn't want to stay in this area anymore. We were really scared. We didn't know what was going on. We're like, we got to get out of here, you know. And it was only about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so we said, okay, it's only an hour to get out of here, so we're going to take off. We took off, and we got down in the one canyon, the only canyon that leads there. There is no tributaries out of this canyon. Well, that's when the weirdness really started happening, because it was almost like we were being drugged and strung out in this canyon for hours on end. Now, it was about dark by the time we got down this canyon. This canyon was only about a 1 hour hike. So we got out the other end of the canyon. It was from 1 o'clock in the afternoon until darkness at night, which I believe was around maybe 6:30 or 7. It could have been a little later that time of the year. And there was a full moon out, but it was literally dark when we got there. So we jumped in our vehicle and we headed out. And on the way out, my wife was just, she was shaking. She didn't want to go back there. She didn't want anything to do with that spot ever again. That was her last trip. And I don't blame her. So we got to a gate. I had to get out and open the gate. And when I got out and opened the gate, that's when I saw it. And all I can say is it looked like a giant vortex, almost like a spiral tornado or an aurora borealis that was made out of particles. And this thing was emanating and going right into that mountain that we had just come off of. And it was, you could see it as plain as day, and it was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen in my life. It wasn't caused by the wind. It was a windless night. There may have been high level winds. I can't tell you if there was or not, but it was a full moon that night. I took my video camera out and I videotaped this anomaly because it was so fantastic. I couldn't believe it myself. My wife was just standing there with her mouth hanging open, but she didn't know what to think.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. See, folks, I told you this would be interesting for you. And I can tell you this, Bill has many more things to share with us. We're going to drill down into this one a little bit, but he's got many, many other cool, interesting experiences with really paranormal stuff like this. And so we are in for a treat for the whole 2 hours tonight. All right, we'll be back right after this.
United Kingdom, and you are listening to the fantastic Kevin Smith Show.
You are indeed listening to the fantastic Kevin Smith Show, and I don't say it with near about as good an accent as she's got. Mine is kind of Texan. We're talking with Bill Riley, and Bill, you were telling us about the weird experience and at this time portal, and your wife didn't ever want to go back there. And you're leaving, and you had to get out to open a gate, and that's when you saw something. What did you see?
It as a plasma tornado. I don't know what it was. I videotaped it, but it was in the dark. And of course, the video didn't come out very good because of the darkness. But I tried to snap some photographs of the event as it was happening, and none of the photographs came out because of the lack of the light out. It was just too dark that night. But it was pretty amazing. I had never seen anything like it before. I've seen a lot of dust devils and a few tornadoes, being from Missouri. And, I had never seen, or heard of anything quite like what we saw that night. And the next day, there was an earthquake. I guess apparently a fault runs through the area down there. And so there was an earthquake the very next day down in that area. And, you know, the only thing I could say is maybe, you know, the fact that there was an earthquake coming and the movement of the earth along with the geode anomalies and this doorway, which is, situated right next to it's about a 40 foot wide solid vein of quartz crystal. And then it's separated by about 6 to 8 feet of negative type, just neutral dirt. And then there's another vein of quartz that runs through there that is approximately, I believe, 15 foot wide. So it's almost like an insulator and a couple of conductors that just run right through the geodes as it goes through these mountains. And if any of that had anything to do with it, you know, I could see how that would.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the conductivity of quartz crystal and crystal radios, of course, were made from quartz crystal. And when you get electricity or any kind of movement in the earth like that involved in it, it's going to create forces that we don't even understand.
All right, now this plasma tornado that you saw, can you kind of describe for us what it looked like?
It looked almost like a spring spiraling downward and getting smaller as it went towards this doorway thing, or this mountain where the doorway was at. And it just terminated on top of that mountain. And where it terminated on top of the mountain, you could see kind of like a flashing glow lighting up the night sky in that direction. It was almost like it was being bombarded. Or maybe there was energy shooting outward in a spiral or an upward, or it was releasing energy, or it could be that it was going towards there. I couldn't tell which way it was actually turning, but you could clearly see it, against the, moonlight and the stars that night and in the darkness out there. And, my wife just stood there for, I don't know, I had to go over and shake her finally. She had never seen anything like that before, and she was pretty impressed by it. But it was just another reason that she said, I'm never going back there again. So we haven't been back there since. But I wouldn't mind going back there again to see what would happen. But one thing I would like to note to everybody out there is once it was all said and done and we were on the way back, I glanced down at my watch that I was wearing that day, and the time that we jumped or we lost while we were up there, although all those numbers, all those hours that we were missing off my watch. They were gone. I still have the watch. They didn't fall off the watch. I don't know what happened to them. They just vanished right off the dial. So the time we were missing, and by the time we got back, who knows what happened, because my watch showed that there was no time there. It was just, it disappeared right off my watch. It was just like it was erased. The time was erased off of my watch. And
now this,
that was just weird.
This watch, it's not a digital watch, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so this is a standard watch face that has numerals on it. And the numerals themselves are gone, is that right?
That's true. I think the numerals from 2 o'clock to about 7, I believe, or somewhere in that area, there was like 4 or 5 were gone off the watch. And then we had another incident where we skipped some time, and there was a numeral missing from that incident on there. So there was actually 2 incidents on my watch that we couldn't explain. And it wasn't for me looking at my watch and saying, it took us a lot longer because there's no time there, but it was just that way. After it was all over, I looked down at my watch, and it's like, holy Toledo. I couldn't believe it. I was like, there is no numbers. I had to show my, look, she said, no, I'm not coming back.
All right, now if you were to take another expedition to this portal, we understand you would have to do so without your wife accompanying you. But if you did, you took this other expedition, you went there, you find the portal again, and it happens to be active when you're there, would you step through it to see what's on the other side?
I don't know. I'd have to cross that doorway when I got to it. I really, I'd throw some stuff through there just like the medicine men did, you know, the chieftains, you know. I would imagine the only chiefs that were there at that time would have been Geronimo, Cochise, a lot of the bigger chiefs that ran the various tribes that were there at the time. But if I went there, I would like to go there and make sure there wasn't any activity. Of course, you can't predict an earthquake, or maybe we can a little bit, but I think that's the only reason that it happened to us when we went there was because of the earthquake, because of the seismic activity that was going on. And I believe that anomalies like that, within the crust of the earth, and the fact that that happened the next day and was building pressure while we were down there, it probably was a release of some kind of an energy that stores in that area because of the situation of those quartz veins and the crystal geodes and the it's almost set up like a giant battery. Just with the geology in that area. It's pretty amazing. I'd never seen any geology like that, and I've been all over Arizona. It's just amazing, the geology down there. But I would probably approach it and get close to it and document some things, maybe take a couple of watches, have somebody back at the main vehicle with a watch, and then synchronize the watches and make sure that they keep absolute time, mechanical watches that is, and maybe even some digital that they'll work out there. We did experience some weirdness with our radios when we were there, getting a lot of static, losing signal, and the electronic devices that we did have seemed to malfunction quite a bit in that area. So, I had a GPS that went down on me while I was in that area, and it didn't start working until we got out of that area again, so that was a little bit scary there too. But we already knew where we were at that point, so we knew how to get out of there, but we didn't realize it was going to take us the rest of the day into the night to go, take a 2-mile hike for an hour. But it was something that I would probably go back there and if we did find the doorway, because I know Jerry looked for it, Jerry never found it. I was able to see it, but the mantle was missing off of the top of the columns. I don't know if somebody else that Ron had told had gone in there and possibly knocked the mantle off of the doorway, or if the monsoon itself knocked it over, if it just crumbled and fell off of there. But you could clearly see the two columns that held the mantle stone for the doorway. But it's like I said, when we made our way over there, and you could keep it in sight as you were going, and as you got closer to it, it would just vanish, and there was nothing there. We did that, I don't know, half a dozen times until we said, okay, we're going to move on from this, and we're going to look for something else, because this is getting a little bit too crazy. But I went around, and when I started searching the area, looking for the doorway, that's when, we lost contact, and I never found any other evidence of the doorway anywhere else. I know that Jerry found an archway when he went down here, which is really interesting. I'd never seen that. That must be further back in there from where we were at. But the experiences that Jerry and his wife and his expedition had down there, was it similar to what happened to me?
Well, I don't remember all of the details, but they camped near the place, their ultimate destination.
Murphy's Cabin.
And I'm not sure where it was, but they camped near their ultimate destination, and big storm blew up, but there were no clouds, and there was this horrendous wind, and blew their camp apart. I think they spent the rest of the night in their SUVs, and this might not be accurate. I think when he arrived at the archway, they had problems with batteries for their video cameras going down, and other things malfunctioning. And they got some. He said they got some really interesting spikes on magnetic spikes on their meters, and so it was, you know, there was some weirdness there, and you know, it was, and when they checked with the weather bureau after they came out of there, and they wanted to know, you know, how strong were those winds, how fast were the winds, and they were told, what winds? We didn't register any high winds. So, yeah, there was some strangeness affiliated with that. He's got, the video of that is on his Expeditions TV website, expeditionstv.com.
Yeah, I watched it a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And when my wife and I first started the search in that canyon, we went in too deep to the canyon, and we had camping gear with us, and we actually spent the night right on one of the geo-packed mountains. I mean, literally the ground was just solid rock, and you could see thousands of these geos just bubbling up out of the ground rock. And we camped right on top of that. We put our tent in there, and the whole night long, there was a buzzing sound coming out of that rock that kept us awake half the night.
Like, you know, I think Jerry said something about a strange sound that was coming out of the area as well. We have to step away for a break, and we'll pick up there when we come back. This is fascinating, and I've got a couple of more questions about it, but I want us to get into this piece of metal that you've got that's ostensibly from a UFO. So we'll do that when we come back. All right, folks, we shall return right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Doing all kinds of gymnastics in here. I got caught on camera doing these gymnastics, trying to get this thing with the TV channel worked out. Some people are seeing it, some people are not. I can tell you the problem is not here, so it's got to be over at Justin TV. But again, if you're one of the people that can't get in there and see it. If you're one of our members and you can't see the TV channel tonight, remember it's a radio show. And we just turn cameras on so you can see me do radio. Okay? And you can listen. Got bunches of places to listen. All right. We're talking with Bill Riley. He is a Tucson businessman. And we're talking about his trip to this time portal in southern Arizona. And, you know, I've been down close to that area. And, in fact, Bill, you probably know where it is, the place I'm about to describe. I actually got out of the car. I was riding, just driving around, looking at that part of Arizona with the producer. And I said, stop. So he stopped. We got out of the car, and I actually filmed a spot that we use on the show, and I filmed it in front of the sign that tells you that you are entering Why Arizona. Have you ever seen Why Arizona?
Why Arizona?
Yeah.
No, I don't believe I have.
It's down close to the border, very close to the border with Mexico. I think you're probably 20 minutes from the border at that point. And so anyway, it's Why, W-H-Y. And I had to get out and actually, I had to use that as a prop. Why Arizona? Okay, we got to use that. Okay, but that's kind of a curious thing in Arizona. But what we're talking about, you and I, is a really weird thing in Arizona. And it's this time portal. All right, now, when you first heard about this, you heard about it from Ron Quinn. And incidentally, I talked with Jerry after I talked with you today and told him again that I want the contact information for Mr. Quinn. I'd love to have Ron Quinn on the show. But anyway, you heard about this portal from Ron Quinn. When you first heard about it, what was your impression? Did you think, this guy's been out in the heat too long, or what did you think?
Well, at the time, I was helping Ron to sell his manuscript into a publisher for a publication, and there was many stories in the book. Ron is basically he's an explorer, he's a treasure hunter, he's a seeker of the unknown. And they had spent their time in Arivaca, Arizona, back in the 50s. They actually walked the walk that they talked. They lived in a tent for 2 years in the desert heat. And they sought out every legend and treasure story that they heard in that short time span. They investigated literally everything that they came across that they were told. And it led him to many different places all over southern Arizona, all over north of Tucson, south of Tucson, up to the Superstition Mountains, in the Catalina Mountains looking for the Iron Door Mine. I mean, Ron was quite an adventurer. He wrote for a few of the major treasure magazines at the time. And this particular story that Ron had in his book was just fascinating. I thought, you know, it's down in an area where he had actually found some treasure in 1984. It was pretty close to the same area. He won't divulge exactly where that area is, but it was close proximity to that, and there was so much rich history in that small area in the Tumacacri mountain range down south by the Arizona border that Ron had dug up through word of mouth that was handed down through generations, you know, stuff that wasn't put in the books, stuff that you can't go to the library and find. Ron was gleaning that out of the local population and going out and actually looking for these lost legends and lost treasures and various anomalies that had either appeared or, you know, sometimes disappeared out there. And the legend of the Indian braves and the Indian tribes, I mean, there's even more to it than what I said earlier. There was a story that was in recent times where they found the body or the skeletal remains of an Indian maiden. And she was dressed in ancient garb that they don't, you know, even the Indian tribes today don't make. I mean, this is pretty ancient stuff. And she was found fairly near to this portal. And I believe that happened in the 1940s is when that happened, when they found the body. And she was holding on to some religious, you know, some tribal religious little icons, I guess, or statuettes that she had in her hands when they found her. And it was just strange because there hasn't been any Indian tribes living in that area for a couple of centuries. So the story was handed down generation after generation through the tribes, through the medicine men of the tribes and the shaman and the chiefs, and only they knew about it. Apparently, this Indian they had, this native they had befriended down in Aravaca, and given rides many different times. He didn't speak. Almost every ride they gave him, he wouldn't say hardly anything. And then finally, one day, he said, "You guys have been nice to me. You haven't asked for anything in return." He goes, "I'm going to tell you this." And he goes, "I'm not really supposed to," but he goes, "My tribe is basically no more. The people have been dispersed into the reservations, and there's no gatherings down there anymore, so it's probably safe for me to tell you this." So he went into the story about the portal, and that's where Ron got it.
Mm-hmm.
Ron's quite a guy, and he's the book he wrote contains, oh, I'd say about 300 pages of various stories, small short stories of the treasure hunting he did, as well as the paranormal things that happened down in that area at the time. And it's just fascinating. I mean, the book was fascinating. I'm sorry that it never got published. I mean, it was a very good manuscript, and if it was, you know, edited real nicely and put in a book form, it probably would have done pretty well. But people just don't like to print some of those kind of books anymore. And, you know, Ron's getting up there a little bit in age, and he has written some more since then. He's got some more. Actually, he does have a book published, come to think of it, that he's written after the fact, that it's about a different subject altogether. But Ron is just a fascinating guy, and he just, it was intriguing to me when I met him and heard the stories that he was telling me, and being of that kind of a nature myself, you know, we just kind of were two peas in a pod, and I just took off and said, "Okay, well, I'm gonna go out and check some of this stuff out if you'll help me." And he did, just like he did Jerry.
Okay,
so a real nice guy.
So now that you know, you've been there and you found the location and you experienced what you experienced and you saw what you saw, what's your take on it? I mean, is it a time portal?
I think it's some kind of gravitational anomaly that it may actually work on the brain. It may do something to the brain when you go down there. I mean, I'm not talking, this is a place, you know, well, like the ancient oracles. They used to go to the temple, and of course now we know it was some kind of carbon monoxide gas that they got their visions from. But I don't honestly think that this area, you know, it's an open area. There wouldn't have been anything like that that would cause it. You know, the heat, that kind of a thing. I mean, I'm pretty used to the heat. I've been out here a long time, and you know, I've done a lot of expeditions and mountain climbing and hiking and what have you in the heat. I'm fairly used to the heat. We had plenty of water that day. You know, what do I think? I think that there's some kind of an energy in those mountains. I think that the Indians knew this and they were tapping into it somehow. How, I don't know. Maybe they used it for their visions. Maybe they used the doorway as a ceremonial, kind of a ceremonial mantle or archway or whatever you would call it to practice their various traditional magics. But the fact that everything, that all this happened on these mountains that were just totally made out of crystal, I think that has a big, you know, has a big thing to do with it there.
All right, we have to step away from break. And, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back from break, we'll continue talking with Bill Riley, and we're going to get into some UFO stuff. We'll be back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. Let me say, if you're just joining us now in this second hour, You don't know a lot of things, and one thing you don't know if you happen to be a member is that apparently there's some kind of problem over at Justin TV, and some people can log in and watch and some people can't, but if you can't, remember it's a radio show. And we got lots of radio feeds linked right up there on the page. You know, you can click where it says listen, that's your first clue, and then you can grab the show that way. How about that? Millions and millions and millions of people are listening right now, and we're glad they are. Welcome, though, if you are joining us just now. My sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour, and we hope you can get that all worked out and not have to miss the first hour again. But if you miss the first hour, you can always become a member. And then you get the archives. How about that? All right, we're talking this evening with Bill Riley. Not Bill O'Reilly, Bill Riley. And but I'll tell you what, Bill, I think it would be interesting to see Mr. O'Reilly with that cowboy hat you've got on. I think he would. I think that's good fashion for Mr. O'Reilly, don't you think? Well, now we're not hearing you, and I don't know why. Is that weird?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. I said I got a little more hair than Mr. O'Reilly, but, you know, he would probably need a hat. I'd say he'd need one, you know. In Arizona, you just get used to it to keep the sun off your head. I don't know how many times I've had the top of my head sunburned.
Yeah, anybody that hasn't been out there and spent a whole summer out there, they just have no appreciation for heat. And so it's, you know, I was out there, you remember, 2001, maybe 2004, I can't remember when it was, but temperatures in Phoenix hit 121 degrees, 122. They closed down Sky Harbor Airport because the tarmac was melting. It was too soft for the airplanes to land.
Yeah, and I believe it was 127.
Is that how hot it was? I know. That's when I started saying I lived in the northern suburbs of hell. It was tough, man. I mean, it was tough. You couldn't even go outside and jump in the pool because the water was hot.
I experienced that in Yuma one time.
Yeah.
It was hot all the way to the bottom. You couldn't get in any cool water. It was hot all the way to the bottom.
You go in the house and you say, oh, okay, well, I'm going to cool off with a cold bath or a shower. No, you're not. All the water in the pipes is hot.
Yep, you're exactly right.
Yeah,
it's hot. It's just like a being on a griddle out here.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into this piece of metal that you have, and
okay.
Go ahead and show that to us, and then if you've got it.
Yeah, I got it right here.
And then tell us the story about that.
Okay. Well, this is supposedly a piece of slag or exhaust metal that came from a UFO. Let me try to get it up here where everybody can see it. I'll put a light on it. Oh, great. I'm on the light there. It's going to get kind of bright here. But maybe this, you can see the side that they used the diamond saw to cut it.
Okay.
And then, let me turn it around here. It's got a weird kind of a molten design to it. Mosaic or whatever you want to call it. Looks like molten metal. Let me see if I can get it up there so everybody can take a look at it there.
Yeah. It does.
The camera.
Does look like molten metal, and yeah.
Yeah. It's a chunk of a larger piece that the gentleman that gave it to me had painstakingly cut from the main piece of metal, which I assume this is the small piece, so there must be a large piece that this came off of. And you notice I don't want to touch it.
Yeah, yeah, I notice
every time I touch that thing, if you touch it too long, it will make you break out, and it gives you a kind of a tingling, weird feeling. It's not radioactive. It's been tested with a Geiger counter. It's not radioactive, but it does have some strange properties to it. And I was doing an investigation back in 2001, I believe. And during the course of that investigation, now, the investigation was for a creature best known as Bigfoot. And I want to put this up so everybody can take a look at that. That's an article. It's got my, if we can get it where we can see it there. But that's me over in the side there, and that's Richard Greenwell and his son Darwin. And we went back to investigate a sighting that basically happened to a small town south of Hannibal, Missouri back in 1972. And there was quite a few people in a town of 4,000 that was involved in it. I would say around between 400 and 600 people that had encounters with this creature that some call Bigfoot. Whether or not it was a Bigfoot, we don't really know. But during the course of that investigation, we were followed everywhere we went. And we noticed it. We noticed this guy was following us. And pretty soon the guy approached us, and he told us about this UFO metal he had. He showed us a bunch of newspaper articles that pertain to the landing of a craft in Illinois at the time, and apparently his family, it was their farm, and this craft landed. They saw it. They were too afraid to approach it, so they waited for the craft to leave. The next day, a couple of boys went out there, and they just wanted to see where the craft had been sitting, and they saw the indentations in the ground from the pad that came down from the craft. And one of them noticed something that looked odd underneath, right near the center of the craft, or where the craft would have been landed at, and the landing site. And they ran over to it, and it was a steaming pile of this molten-looking metal. It was giving off kind of a steam when they saw it, and they touched it, but it didn't seem to hurt. You know, it didn't seem to be hot, but it was just giving off, you know, kind of like it was just hot. It cooled down. So they picked it up, and they ran back home with it. Apparently, by the time they got home, they broke out with a mysterious rash all over their bodies and had to be rushed to the hospital. So the gentleman showed us the articles pertaining to the landing and the sighting from the local newspapers in Illinois around this town, and I can't give you the exact town. I've lost it. It was something that the guy told me a long time ago. But he wanted me to take this medal, and I told him I wasn't really a UFO investigator at the time, but my brother was in MUFON, so I said, okay, well, I'll see if I can get my brother to analyze your metal for you. But I said, I'm not giving you any promises, because I said, you know, I don't know if my brother has made a full investigator for MUFON yet, because investigators for MUFON have to go through a series of tests, and they have to basically qualify. I mean, you just can't walk in there and become an investigator for MUFON for UFO hunting. My brother never did quite achieve that level with MUFON. I don't think he went and took all the tests. And years kind of went by, and I just kind of held on to it. I came back out here to Tucson from Missouri, and put it in my safe downstairs, and it's been down there ever since. Now, I did approach George Parks with the local MUFON chapter here in Tucson, and talked to him a bit about it. We were discussing taking it and having it analyzed and sending it off to a lab. I would imagine that things have advanced to a point now that they could analyze it quite a bit better than what they could have back when he first started trying to get the metal analyzed. So it'd be kind of interesting to see what it comes out at. Now, he said that originally he gave a very small piece to what he thought was a MUFON agent, but after calling the guy repeatedly and trying to get in contact with him, he came to the conclusion that this guy was pretending to be a MUFON agent and really wasn't, and he thinks that he just stole the piece from him. Now, I don't know if the guy is still alive or not. I think the last time I heard from him was between 5 and 8 years ago. And at the time, I told him that, you know, I said I hadn't had a chance to take it in. I'd been talking with George Parks, and that we had discussed taking the piece and sending it off to MUFON. And that I also told him at the time, I said, with the documentation that he had on this UFO landing and this metal and the documentation that he had through the articles that he showed me from what happened to the boys after they handled the metal and the things that surrounded the whole sighting, as well as the local chapter of Project Blue Book, which was supposed to be disbanded then, but apparently they were still operating out of the Rancun Air Force Base right there in Illinois. They had come and questioned and approached them and tried to get the metal from them, and they said they'd already thrown it away because they figured they would just take it if they refused them. So he held on to the metal for all those years. And
now he was one of the kids, right? I mean, he's a full-grown man when you meet him, and he's an older guy by now, I guess, but he was one of the kids.
He was younger. Either it was him that experienced it, or it was one of his sons. I'm kind of vague on the story when it comes to that because, like I said, at the time we were in a rush. He was showing me these articles, which were just unbelievable. I mean, even Richard Greenwell was commenting that the newspaper articles that this gentleman had were just fantastic. I mean, about this whole sighting and what had happened afterwards. But a lot of documentation this guy had on this metal. And as the years progressed, I did get a call years later. I told the guy, I said, look, I said, you've got a big chunk of a UFO. So I said, cut it up in little pieces and slap it on eBay, dude. You'll be sitting in Easy Street because somebody just sold a piece down in Florida for $8 million, you know? I haven't done that with mine, but I'd have to get his permission before I could do something like that with it. But, I don't know if the gentleman is still around. I'd really like to see those articles that he had, verify the pieces being from that landing site, because apparently what he said was this is an exhaust port. It comes out of the exhaust port of a UFO, and it spits it out when it takes off or something. I don't know if that's true or not or what, but it's an amazing piece of metal. Is super hard. The guy broke a bunch of diamond bits trying to cut it, but it's light as a feather. There's no weight to it hardly at all. Oh, I don't want to put it in my hand there, but I'll put it on his bag.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and put the telephone number up on our screen, and I will announce the telephone number as well. Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to join the conversation tonight if you have a question or if you have a comment for Bill. Pretty amazing stuff here, especially that time portal. And, it's pretty amazing having a piece off a UFO as well, or that purports to be off of a UFO. But the telephone number is 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. If you are in the USA, if you are in Canada, please use the telephone number, give us a call, and you can ask your questions and make your comments, okay? Let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Jerry.
Hi, Jerry.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Bill, this is Jerry Wills.
Hey, Jerry.
Hello. Hey, Bill.
Long time right here, dude.
It's been a long time since I saw you, buddy.
Yeah.
Fascinating story. I tuned in about 15 minutes late. I was trying to figure out the video feed.
aren't we all trying to figure it out?
I had a little trouble tonight with that. I think it's because of this piece of this UFO causing interference.
Some remote viewing to see that metal piece. I wanted to find out what year you guys went down there. That's the piece missing from what I know so far.
Oh, went down to the portal? Or went down to where the UFO landed?
The portal.
Oh, the portal. That would have had to been around 2001, late 2001, early 2002.
So that would be
the reason I know that is I bought a brand new quad at the time, just so I could get back in there a little further.
Well, you had mentioned the standing columns, and we scoured that area. We didn't see two standing columns at all. There was nothing there except for that other portal.
Right, that archway that you guys found, which is fascinating within itself. That was pretty neat when I saw that.
Yeah, I was talking to Ron Quinn this afternoon, and he was going on about how he went out there recently. And that he went to where the portal was because he has copies of, you know, the DVD. And he said, that wasn't there 50 years ago. I can't explain it.
What wasn't there?
That portal, that archway.
Oh, the archway.
Yeah.
Did he find his original portal?
He crisscrossed that whole plateau, that whole area. He lived there for a couple of years, as you know.
Yeah.
And he said, if that had been there, I would have known it and could not have missed it. He says that wasn't there 50 years ago.
What about the original portal?
The original portal? Well, we didn't see any evidence of it at all. I was looking, you know, very carefully over the entire plateau because I didn't really know where to look. But
when Ron went down there recently, did he find it?
No, he couldn't find it either. He said it's completely gone. There's no evidence of it.
I knew that. I mean, when I saw it, we actually saw this thing. It looked like it was moving in and out of where, you know, of this time, I guess. I don't know. The thing would fade in and out. You could go towards it. You could see it. And then as you went towards it, it would just vanish. We did that three or four times, and we gave up.
The time dilation that you and your wife experienced, Kathy and I ran out of water. On one of the trips, just she and I went back there. We spent 2 days combing that area. And on the second day, we just ran out of water. And it seemed like we were there for a really, really long time. It just was the strangest thing. And finally, I managed to get out of there and get water and go back after Kathy, and it still seemed to take forever.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that place, but it is definitely got a some kind of a force that I don't know what it does in there. It's just weird. I mean, Ron can tell you about it. I mean, he knows even more than what he put in his book, and they had never seen the archway that you found, but I know Ron's brother got lost, or he didn't get lost, but he took a few steps and ended up three or four mountains over.
You remember that. Tell me about that. Something similar happened to Ron as well. Ron also said that 6 months ago there was a man who went down there just exploring around, hunting. He's really not sure what. But he knows about this because the man's brother contacted him wanting to know what he knew about the area. Have you heard about this?
Last time I talked with Ron, he was telling me that there was another guy that was had come and approached him, and he was divulging information about his location, and the guy was down there. I don't know if it's the same guy or not, but it sounds like.
What happened is that the guy has vanished. They haven't found his body, him, nothing, but his things, his truck, everything else was intact. He had made a phone call to his brother describing where he was, and that was the last time this brother heard from him, and no one's found any evidence of him since.
Jerry, when did this happen? Wow. When did the guy go missing?
Ron said it was about 6 months ago.
Wow.
I'm sure there's got to be a police report about this. I think Kathy is going to do some research and try to get, you know, real specific with it. We were thinking about going back down there, and Bill, we'd love to have you come along.
Oh, that would be great. I'd love that.
Really would. In any way.
So, anytime you're ready.
I'll release the phone and let others call in. I know you have to have hundreds wanting to call.
Well, we'll see.
Call Kevin and Bill. I'll be in touch with you.
Okay, Jerry. I look forward to it.
All right.
Thanks, Jerry. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. If you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, but and you don't want to make that international long-distance call, but you do want to participate in the show, send me a flash message. Go to my website. Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it, the link that says Flash Message. But that is only for those who are not in Canada and not in the USA. If you're in Canada or the USA, it's a talk show. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Ben. I'm calling from Florida.
Hello, Ben.
The piece of metal that you, I guess you put it too close to the camera, it was a little out of focus. Could you try to put that up again? And you said it
sure.
was very light, but very hard. Have you tried to put heat to it, like a blowtorch or anything like
I'm
that?
I'm not going to do anything that would jeopardize
metal.
Any kind of analyzing they might do to it in the future. I just want to leave it like it is. And so
okay, now you're too close to the camera.
Yeah, back
okay,
in the
back
there you
back.
Go. Yeah.
Right there. Hey, really, really something. And you said it came out of an exhaust pipe?
That's the story. They said that it melts out of the exhaust or the jets or whatever of the craft.
Alright, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this.
This is America, and you're listening to the Kevin Smith Show, like no other talk radio on earth.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we are talking with Bill Riley. Like Jerry Wills, he has been to this time portal. Jerry has been to that area and experienced a very similar kind of strangeness in the area. And Bill has been to the area and saw where the portal was supposed to be. But as they would try to approach it, it would just vanish. And so all kinds of weirdness going on. And also he shared with us a piece of what is purported to be from a UFO. Perhaps it is. It was given to him by a person who was a witness to a UFO landing. We have a flash message from Belgium, from Spardella Giulio in Belgium. And he says, do you have a picture of the medal on a website or somewhere else? Thank you. And I believe, Bill, the answer to that is no. I don't think you have a website, do you?
No, I don't right now. I can take a picture and send it to you so you can post it up on yours if you'd like.
Sure, that'll be fine. I'll be glad to do that.
Okay,
and
we'll do that after the show.
Okay.
Be glad to do that.
And then also he has this question. Could the medal give a person special powers or prophetic dreams or something like that?
I don't know if it would do something like that. I do know that it does cause a rash. I don't know if it has some kind of a dangerous chemical that's in it. I've never tried meditating with it to see if it possibly has some kind of a power like a crystal or some other kind of magic rock. I suppose it could have some kind of a power to help give somebody a dream, but I don't know. I do know that it will make you sick, so if you could take the sickness along with, you know, be able to hold the thing and do some meditating, maybe it would allow you to have a dream. You'd probably wake up from the dream and be in the hospital, but maybe. I don't know.
That might not be a good idea. All right, to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Jerome.
Hi. Bill, my question to you, actually Jerry Wills stole some of my thunder here, but it involves water. When you were and your wife were going to go into this canyon, specifically, what was your game plan be for your duration, and how much water did you actually physically carry with you?
I carried, I believe it was, put it this way, I carried so much water. My wife had to carry a lot of water. She couldn't carry her water. I ended up carrying her water, and then I almost ripped my, tore my knee up doing it. But I believe we had close to 6 gallons of water, which there was a tremendous weight. I think I had an 85-pound pack at one time going back in there. We had plenty of water. We made sure that we had plenty of water.
How long was that water supposed to last you?
It depends on your activity level and the heat. Generally in Arizona, they say you can go through a gallon of water an hour if you're climbing or hiking or what have you. Now, this area wasn't that far back. It's not that hard of a hike. It's not climbing or anything like that. It's just a pretty scraggly canyon floor that you have to traverse. It's kind of sharpy rocks on the bottom, shale and that kind of a thing. And it takes about an hour. And usually before my wife and I go on a hike, while we're traveling to the area, because we drove from Tucson down to there, and we probably drank at least a gallon of water on the way, because you have to hydrate first before you go into these areas, because you can dehydrate even though you're drinking massive amounts of water. You have to get the water in your body beforehand before you go into it. It's just a normal procedure in Arizona because of the heat. But we had plenty of water when we were in there, and I know Jerry was saying that they ran out of water and things seemed different and their time was distorted a little bit. And that's understandable. When you run out of water and you start going into heat stroke, you know, the first symptoms are you get headache and then you start eventually cramping up, and then you go through another phase of it where you literally strip all your clothes off and start running like a wild person naked through the desert. And that's usually the final stages of it. And then you collapse, and that's the end of it. But, I would have to say that is short of a distance as the area that we went to was, because I know that we overshot the area so many times and went so far back into that area and missed it, and actually went further than we needed to. And then when we actually found it, it's like, oh gosh, it's right here. It wasn't that far. It was only, you know, about an hour. And that's just an hour you'll usually walk. It's not hiking very fast at all or anything like that. But, no, normally we fill our pack up with as much water as we can physically carry when we go in there. And, you know, Gatorade and stuff like that too.
At the end of the day then, you didn't notice, like Jerry did, that you physically ran out of water or consumed more water than you had expected for your trip?
No. No, there was nothing like that. We had plenty of fluids. We had plenty of food, plenty of fluid. We were actually thinking on staying there for the night. And that didn't happen. We weren't going to stay there. When we got there, it looked like somebody had, fairly near to where the portal was, somebody had chiseled out what looked like a rectangular spot in the bedrock, almost like it was some kind of a little, I don't know, encampment that they had made right there, real close to it. I suppose it was probably the Indians when they were using it. But it wasn't really that bad of a hike getting in and out of there. Of course, it was pretty hot when my wife and I went in there, and I guess it was when Jerry and his wife and his team went back in there too. But they pretty much chronicled most of their trip on video on his website, and you can kind of take a look at that and watch it and see if they show that part when they went in there and see just how bad they were. Because I know I've dehydrated myself many times.
I
mean, this is Arizona.
I kind of like the Jerry used as time dilation. Did you notice any, other than your watch, which I found very, and I want to ask you about that, did you notice any time dilation?
It was more of a time offset than it was a dilation. It was just like, it was skipping. It's kind of hard to explain, but it was almost like the canyon had stretched itself out and was trying to hold you back from going, almost like it was, I don't know, repeating itself as you were going, almost like you're going in circles, but you're not. There's no way to go in circles in that canyon. It's just a one-in, one-out canyon. It's not a very wide canyon. It's not a very, it's kind of steep, but it's just not very wide. It's just one trail in and out. We had already been through the canyon many, many, many times before we actually found where the portal was actually at. It's like I said, Ron just took pictures of the scenery and said, okay, you'll know when you're there when you see this skyline. So that kind of makes it hard to find, but eventually I was able to hammer out Ron where it was exactly at. And once we found it, it wasn't that big of a deal to get there. It was a pretty short hike, and it wasn't very hard. Which I was glad, because, you know, during heat like that, you don't want to do
and
too much.
You mentioned on your watch, if I understand what you were saying, the face of your watch, it was actually missing some numerals? Or
yeah, the numerals just disappeared off the face of the watch. Now, whether I never did find an explanation for that, I just know that once it was all done and I looked down at my watch, and we kind of figured out what kind of time we lost. I looked down at my watch, and I said to my wife, I said, look at this. And she looked at it, and, of course, she, you know, got a shiver over her spine. We're like, what happened? Now, whether or not, you know, the two are connected, I don't know. Maybe my watch was defective. Maybe my sweat got into the watch and melted the numbers off of it. Maybe the sun got to it. I don't know. I just know that the numbers, the numerals on my watch were missing for the time that we seemed to have gotten stuck and couldn't really, even though we were walking, make it out of there. It was almost like things fast-forwarded and we headed out of there, and boom, it was dark, just like that. It was like, what the heck happened? We were coming out. And then, of course, we wanted to get out of there before dark. That's why we left early. And we were trying to make it back to Tucson before it got too late. But as it was, we got out of there, and it was already dark by the time we got out of there, and we just couldn't believe it.
Also on the columns, you mentioned that the mantle wasn't there.
Correct.
Obviously, the mantle is not needed for the vortex or whatever, the portal to, you know, be effective.
That's probably correct, I would say, because there were still things going on there even though the mantle was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron said he couldn't find it either.
It would seem to me that the mantle would be just like a marker, you know, but even with it's very surrealistic with Jerry not being able to find the columns and you not seeing his arch.
Yeah, it's just part of that place. I mean, that place is weird. And I guess the legends go back quite a ways within the Indian tribe. Ron would know more about that. He knows what tribe and who the Indian guy was that told him that. I wouldn't doubt the guy is still alive. He was a young guy back then. He might still be around. It'd be kind of nice to look him up and get the first-hand account of that area. It'd be something we might look into with Jared.
Okay, Jerome, thanks for the call. We have to move along.
Thank you, Jerome.
Thank you very much. Interesting points. 623-444-5889. And, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi there, this is Elias. I'm calling from Portland, Maine.
Hello, Elias.
Hey, Elias.
How are you folks tonight?
Good.
Good.
Great. So here's my question. If you go and do this expedition with Jerry and the time portal is discovered, are you guys going to go through it?
Well, that's what... Kevin asked me earlier if I would go through the thing. I wouldn't go through it by myself, put it that way. If somebody wants to go through it with me, I might do it. But, you know, from what I'm understanding here, since we just had somebody else disappear down there while looking for it, obviously you don't come back if you go through it. So I guess you better pack a big bag or something because...
Well, that's what I was thinking, because you guys, if you are going to do something like that, you should come up with some kind of system for contacting yourselves in the future. Like, depending what era you go back to, you could leave an article in, like, one of the old Phoenix newspapers, or...
Okay, you're going to have to hang on, Elias. We have a break taking over, and we'll get to you right after the break. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach. A quick reminder, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll get back into our discussion. But here's the reminder. Remember, we have the Alternative Universe iConference coming up. You don't have to buy a plane ticket to get there. You don't have to buy pay for a hotel. You don't have to buy meals because you don't have to go there. Why? Because the Alternative Universe iConference comes to you. It'll happen right there in your living room or wherever your computer is. And you get to experience it live. Questions and answer period after each presentation. Five great speakers. Four great speakers and me. And so it's going to be a great experience. And it's $10. You cannot beat that. It's $10. All right. So get over to my website, click the link that says Alternative Universe and get your ticket. All right, on the telephone with us, Elias, and he's from Maine. And Elias, we had to kind of cut you off there because the break took over. I wanted to give you the opportunity to finish your thought.
Thanks so much. I just wanted to say that if you guys do plan to go through the time portal, you should come up with some kind of system to contact the future in case you get stuck back in the past. Like, depending on the era you end up in, you could, like, leave some personal ads in some of the old Phoenix papers, or you could, go to a very out-of-the-way place that you don't think is going to be disturbed and write some kind of message, like maybe up on South Mountain. So, maybe our friend who goes up there can find some messages from you guys from the past. It's me and Jerry. We're stuck in the past. Come. That kind of thing. But
take some technology with me, man, so we'd be much further along all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah. But I'll let somebody else get on the line. I just wanted to say that. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Yeah, I'm not real sure how that works. I do think theoretically time travel is possible. I can't prove that it is. I think, theoretically speaking, that it is probably possible. But I've read theories that say, well, you know, you could travel back in time only to the point where someone invented the time machine. So
that might be true. I mean, it's hard to explain. Maybe time is more set up like different dimensions, different folds. Each fold is a dimension. Maybe it doesn't take you back into time. It takes you into a different dimension. Maybe the opposite world of what we're in. It's hard to say where that thing leads to. It's hard to say. I know that there's a cabin on the side of a mountain, I think it's up in Oregon, that has extremely weird gravity in it. And it's another one of the anomalies in the gravitational grid of the Earth that they actually give you tours of. And I can't think of the name of it right now, but
I did a show on gravity anomalies here a couple of weeks ago, and we had a guest on who had been out to a place in California, and he videotaped this, and he shows, I mean, there's no question about it, he puts a tennis ball down at the bottom of a hill, and it rolls up the hill. He puts a car in neutral at the bottom of the hill, and it rolls up the hill. Pours water on the ground, it runs up the hill.
Rolls up the hill.
Yeah. And this is just on a roadway out there.
Well, that just reminded me of something. All of the rivers and streams in Arizona run north.
Is that why there's no water in Phoenix?
Probably. They run north towards Phoenix, but then they dry up under the ground before they get into Phoenix, but
yeah, you know, there's
all be a big inland sea in here. It was a rift valley just like Africa. And all of the rivers, I think there's one other place in the whole world that has rivers that run backwards, and there's only two places, and this is one, and there's another one. I forget where it's at. It may be in Africa. It may be the Amazon. I don't know.
The Nile River. Flows,
could be the Nile.
Yeah, it flows north. But there's, we talked about when I did the show on the gravity anomalies, we talked about the possibility that these gravity anomalies perhaps could be sort of like natural stargates, natural portals of some kind. And, of course, again, it's speculation, but something is going on there. There is something strange that happens in these places, and that's why we call it paranormal.
Well, you know, time and gravity are interconnected, because without gravity and without the movement of the sun and the stars and within the universe, we wouldn't, there wouldn't be no time. I mean, I know that time varies from planet system to planet system, and that if a, you know, there's certain worlds where the days are 48 hours long, or maybe the days are a week long, you know, by the time it makes its full revolution around the sun and those galaxies, in those star systems. So,
well, even Mars.
Time is not a constant everywhere at every place in the universe.
Well, even Mars, its day is about a half hour longer than our day. And, you know, and that's a function of how fast it's turning on its axis and how big around is it. And but it's turning, I would say, quite a bit slower than Earth because it's only about 50% the size of Earth, and yet its day is about half an hour longer. So it's turning on its axis quite a bit slower than Earth is.
How many moons does Mars have?
Two.
They do, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got one called Phobos and one called Deimos. And they're both of them quite weird. Very strange little moons.
Does that have anything to do with the longer days, or is it just the size of the planet itself and its
well,
longer
it's orbit? It's the speed at which it revolves around its axis. So it's moving quite a bit slower. You know, as I say, it's about 50% the size of Earth, maybe 52%, something like that. So you would expect if it turned at the same rate that Earth turns, its day would be half the time of day, of Earth days. So it's not. It's turning slow enough that its day is actually about 30 minutes longer. And so that's, you know, and then you have planets where a day is like almost a full year here. And I believe Venus is one of those. I believe one day on Venus is like 240 of our days.
Wow.
So it's turning very, very slowly on its axis. And that is curious to me as to what is it that sets the speed for those things. Anyway, Bill, it's been a pleasure to have you with us, and I've got to bring this in for a landing. We're just about out of time.
Okay.
And it's been a pleasure. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. It's been fascinating.
Oh, no problem. I mean, there's many other subjects on that list that I gave you that we could discuss, and I'd be more than happy to. I've got all kinds of material. I'm going to try to get my website back up. It's can I say it or no?
Yeah, but you have to do it fast. We're almost out of time.
Legendhunter.com is the website.
Okay, thanks. I wish I had more time, but I don't. We're racing towards the closing bell here, like racing toward a brick wall. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget Alternative Universe Eye Conference, all right? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again.